Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, academic lectures in business and economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240 for spring semester 2026. Welcome to Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 1. I am Professor Alan Kring of the Department of Finance, Insurance, and Law. You can call me Professor Kring or Professor C. And I will, in just as a heads up, I will be having the Cengage representative come in here at 2:15 to help you if you're having trouble registering for the materials for the course. We use the Cengage for the textbook and for the homework problems. To begin this, read the syllabus. Make sure that you don't blow it off. It is very important that you know what the expectations are in the class. A few cautions to begin. I'm a very loud instructor. I will talk to you and ask you to respond to me in kind. I even can give you some rather harsh words once in a while. My background is I'm 46 years into teaching. I've also been in the I was in the consulting business for many years, so I have a lot of stories to tell you. And in fact, there is a textbook supplement where you can see some of the stories that I will tell you in class as well. I got out of that business, consulting, after I almost got killed or thrown in jail. So now I'm here teaching you. I run my own company, and I will use that as one of my examples for a lot of the different things that we talk about in this class. My company has been in business for 14 years now. When I'm not a professor, I'm a professional artist and photographer. And like I said, I'll show you these business principles, a lot of them. I was involved in, I ran a brokerage house, a penny stock house long ago. So I will be talking a lot about that. Every day in this class, we will begin with a look at the numbers, where I will show you how to read stock and bond and commodity screens so that you can become empowered to think for yourselves instead of listening to others tell you what you should think. And that's an important part of this course. And if my reviews have any meaning, that is the most popular part of this, is telling you about what is happening out there in the world of finance, in the actual fire and shrapnel at the corner of Fifth and Main and all of that. And we'll talk about what investments are good, what are investments are bad, how you look at the numbers for yourself so that you can make informed judgments in your lives once you have some money to invest. Trying to think before I go much further. The syllabus, again, make sure that you read it in its entirety. A couple of things along the way. I am licensed, I am certified by IBM in artificial intelligence, and it has become a major useful product in college education, but it has also become a disaster in cheating in college. Attendance and cheating are the big problems, and artificial intelligence is now being used rampantly instead of students doing tests themselves. Hence why, in a class like this, you have a lockdown browser for quizzes and exams. You just have to do it that way to keep that part of that from happening. You also have to have your phones put away during the class, so you can't be referencing over to them to get to ChatGPT or Claude or one of the other services like Gemini Pro. And also no earbuds in the classroom, because now you can whisper to a chat, read a question, and then it can tell you what the answer is in your earbuds if you know how to do it. It's not that hard to figure that out. Hence, all of these measures, which are unfortunate, they distract from what I'm trying to accomplish here, have to be in place because of AI. And it's still sneaking through. There's still a few ways. Meta glasses are showing up. And of course, those are prohibited in the classroom. And they're getting to the point now where they are going to start going down in price enough that they are affordable to about anyone, otherwise known as the creep glasses, because now they're able to do, about to be able to do facial recognition as part of what you get when you get your Meta glasses. But anyway, a couple of things along the way here. The textbook is what you use to do the homework. The homework I give you, as our Cengage representative will explain to you, you get three tries at every section of every homework. So it is not hard to get a really good score, a high score on that part of the course. Now, the tests and quizzes are all based on what I say in the lectures. In other words, that part of it, you may find it in the textbook, but you might not. And so you have to be here to listen every day. And if there's some place where the book and I disagree on a subject, who's right? Who is that? Yeah, that's good. You're good. Yeah, okay. The textbook is necessary, and I fill in a lot of detail in the lectures and a lot of terminology. As a matter of fact, my teaching assistant from a couple of years ago compiled how many new terms and words I give during the semester, and it's over 400. And that is a staggering amount of knowledge that you have to absorb over the course of this semester in my class. So be on your toes. And I do recognize in the first couple of weeks, you're not going to catch everything. And even along the way, you might not. That's why I actually provide you with a podcast of every lecture I give. I've been doing this for now. If I'm keeping account, Apple Podcasts, I was one of the first education podcast that they put into Apple iTunes, and it's still running every semester. Here it is. Now, this is last semester. I don't have any lectures from this semester to give you yet, but you can see the layout of it. Your section would be section one. You click here, and you can listen to this podcast, and you can listen to it at any time, when you're lonely, when you're eating, when you're on the toilet. You can listen to me again and relive the dream that is the class, or not. Now, if you don't want to hang around my creepy-ass website, you can click here and you'll go over to Apple iTunes. And now they call it Apple Podcasts, but it's iTunes. And all these podcasts are produced. I produce them professionally because that was originally what Apple wanted. You know, we're going to let you in if you do this like it's a real thing. And so they start with a nice music and my voice sounding serious, Alan Kring Productions and Associates, that whole thing. So, Apple has been very good to me. And generally speaking, when I upload the podcast to my own site, it's within seconds. An Apple spider has grabbed it and brought it over to Apple iTunes for you to listen to there. And it's free, obviously. It's a free subscription. It's Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, and that's been its title for many, many years. But if you want to, you can always hang around my own site here and listen to the podcast right there. And I try to have them up within 6 hours of giving a podcast. Sometimes it's a little longer if there are server issues and all of that kind of stuff, but it's generally there. And then if that's not enough for you, you say, well, I didn't really like that way you gave that lecture on bonds. Well, these are the whole semesters for years going back. I don't think I went back all the way, but you can click on any semester and you can listen to the podcast there if you want another angle on how I presented it. And also, I am, as I said, professional in another world, and I am a merchant on Amazon. I have an Amazon storefront, And I also, you'll find me at art exhibitions around the country, hanging out with all the other gypsies, tramps, and thieves trying to sell my art. And like I said, I'll tell you a lot about that as the semester goes along, just to reinforce principles of finance that we do in a class like this. But anyway, there's your podcast. At any time, you can listen. It's isu-prof.com, isu-prof.com. And then you can go there and listen to these. And they are comforting to you if you're sad and lonely and it's raining and it's dark. Listen to me. I'll make you happy again. Or not. Probably not. Okay. But anyway, without further ado, I am going to introduce Chris Olson. He is a Cengage representative for Illinois State University, as well as a lot of other places. And he'll give you the lowdown on what's going on, how you register, what's the best way, what's the best package to buy, and all of that. So now we are going to go to, quizzes, I've covered those. There's the in-class quizzes, which are in Respondus Lockdown Browser. There's the out-of-class online quizzes. They are not in Lockdown because those are the ones where you use the Excel templates that I'm going to be giving you. And once Respondus seems to have a real problem with, even if I embed the Excel spreadsheets in the Respondus quiz, they still screws up sometimes. So those are open. I will caution you that the templates have hidden commands in them so that if you try to do it using an AI, my subcommands will tell the AI to give wrong answers to you. That's just a warning. So just use the Excel on its own. Learn how to use it. It makes it a lot easier. There are problems in this course. Back in the day, they would have taken like probably 2-3 hours just for one number as an answer. Excel just says lol and there's your answer. So that makes it a lot better to do it this way. You know, and there's still a lot of flack. You should be making them do it by the formulas. Well, if they do it by the formulas, are they using a calculator? Well, of course they are. Well, there's a technology and it's an old technology. Let's move these people up to the 21st century. A little caution about artificial intelligence. And as I said, I'm certified by IBM in artificial intelligence. I run a workshop here every semester in prompt engineering. We're all in the back room. We're now working on very scary things that are coming up with artificial intelligence. The one thing you've got to watch out with AIs is that they are not, at least the easy versions, the free versions, they're not good at finance math. They're not good at several kinds of math. Unless you really shape the prompts properly, they are very likely to give you wrong answers. And I know that for a fact. One time I decided to make a test bank of just 100 problems that were exactly alike, except the numbers were different and the name of the company was different. And I had an agentic AI. I gave it, here's my problem. Now make 99 more just like it and give me the answers. 97 of its answers were wrong. It did perfect for the problems, but then it got the answers wrong. And that's something that it does, especially in certain kinds of math that involve present values and future values, unless you really shape the prompt well. I'm trying to think if there's anything else that as far as quizzes go, I do drop a quiz on both the online and on the in class. So if you miss or you blow a quiz, you're still in the game. Now again, quizzes and midterm and final are all based on lectures. What I say here in this classroom to you. If it's in the book, well, that's great, but it doesn't have to be in the book. But if there's something in the book that I don't cover in class, I'm not going to ask you about that. There are a few parts of this in finance, especially a lot farther along, where you're getting pretty deep, and I avoid those in a class, in an introductory level finance class. So even though you'll see it in the book, I will assiduously avoid those in the classroom. The purpose here is to teach you finance, not to break your will to live. I can do that on my own by other means. As I had cautioned you, I am loud and I'm aggressive, and I work and I live in a world of finance. I have been a broker in that world. I ran my own house. I've been on Wall Street. My students are always, former students are out there, and they're constantly in communication with me. Sometimes almost all night we're talking about what's going on, what the world's problems are meaning to prices of stocks, bonds, and commodities. So I'm telling you the stories of how this is used, what's going on out there. And as such, by the time you finish with this course, you're going to know more than easily 99.9% of the people out there who have no clue about what's going on in the world. There are literally quadrillions of dollars flowing across the world 24/7, clocking it out from sunrise to sunrise. It's happening there, and you'll see that world, and I'll show you how that world works. And it is a cruel, cutthroat world. There's no place in my world for feelings and beliefs and hopes and dreams or even religion. This is a world where there is a driving need for money. And I guarantee you that if I'm in trading and you decide that you're going to counter me, I'm going to take your lunch money. And you, if you keep pushing it, I will take your retirement fund, and then you'll live on the street as a homeless person and you'll be sad. And when I go by you, you'll say, "Do you have a dollar?" You know what I'll say to you? "You're a bad investment." No. The first thing that I want to do is convince you about the drive that is behind everything that we do in finance and in economics. Finance is a subdiscipline of economics. We are not doing accounting. I have to teach you some accounting. Every time I have to teach accounting, I come to the classroom thinking, do I want to go in there and teach it, or do I just want to kill myself? For God's sake. By the way, I used to be a stand-up comedian. Deal with it. Long ago. But we don't do accounting. We use accounting produces information products for different constituencies. We have to take those numbers, and in some cases, we just throw them away, like profit. We really don't give a rat's ass about profit. Well, everyone talks about, no, we don't care. What we care about is cash flow. I ran a consulting firm. Every Thursday night, I had to cut payroll. And if I didn't have the cash to pay those people, well, they were pretty rough people. They would have beaten the crap out of me. So I had to care about cash flow. On paper, I was profitable. But the reality is that cash is king. Now let's talk about a deeper issue here. You, sir, are a bread maker. You make bread, and you are the only bread maker in your village. That means that if people want bread, they have to come to you, and you can charge them whatever you want. So you don't really care about the cost of inputs. You take flour and you're trying to put it into the big pot. Oops, about half that went on the floor. Oh, well, guess I have to charge people more. You hire your lazy-ass brother here who does nothing but sit in the basement and eat Cheetos all day and play World of Warcraft. Really? Old geezer's game? Look, you don't care because you can just charge whatever you want. You waste resources. You don't think of efficient ways to do things at all because you are the only game in town. And then you walk in, madam, and you say, "You know what? I see someone who doesn't deserve all the money he has." There are a lot of people like that in the world. Kanye comes to mind. What you're going to do, you know, all you'd have to do to cut costs is to be careful, measure. Carefully put things over from one place to another. Don't hire unproductive people. That is using resources efficiently. That's called static efficiency. Static efficiency is the efficient use of resources in production. Static efficiency is the efficient use of resources in production. But now, you, madam, come along, and you look at her. She doesn't deserve that. She's taking his money, but she's, you know, look at, you know, she's just, I mean, she's not TikTok famous. You aren't, are you?
No.
Good, good.
You got that.
I had a TA who was actually an influencer on TikTok. No, hell no. You know what? She would videotape herself, and I walked this way, and she's, lady, no. Okay, but you see this, and you say, you know what? Why am I hiring labor when a machine could measure, put it in, take it out, another machine, a conveyor belt, instead of having people who carry it over to the ovens and all that, take it out and wrap it by hand? Why can't I do that with a more efficient technology? Now, in your lives, all you hear is technology being used for computers and things like technology in your home, technology in your car, technology in your butt. No, technology is how you arrange factors of production. There have been technologies since, actually, many animals we are now appreciating have technologies. We as primitive humans, we had one technology, stone. Hit man fall, me get his food and woman. Okay, now, then they started using a technology for using scraping to get sharp edges. That was an advance in the technology. And then somewhere along the line, we figured out more efficient technology for throwing the spear, the arrow. And then we figured out chemicals. Boy, they go boom. And then they figured out atoms. Well, that the city turned into a parking lot pretty quickly. And then the next step will be the quantum world where we'll have planet crackers. Okay, but that's technology. That's a different kind of efficiency. That's called dynamic efficiency. Dynamic efficiency is efficiency drawn from the use of advancing technologies. So you started with a technology and very inefficient use of resources. You solved the problem of inefficient resources through static efficiencies. Then you solved the problem of technological efficiency by moving to new technologies, conveyor belts, you know, machines, electricity, and all that kind of stuff. Now, there we go. The first thing here is that you, sir, and you, madam, and you, madam, you did not do what you did because you love your customers. That's what we say. We produce this because we care about Mother Gaia. We care about the world. We care about our customers. We love our customers. I mean, damn, we love our customers. No, you don't. You did it because you wanted to make some damn money. And when you came into that business, you weren't there, oh, I feel bad for those customers. I'm going to do. No, you wanted to take his money and make his kids go to Illinois State. Oh. And you did the same thing. There's nothing about care for humanity in these decisions. And we say that. We say that there is, but that's marketing. You wanted to drive her out of business. She wanted to drive him out of business. Shark eat shark eat shark. Greed is behind everything we do. This is a powerful lesson in our world, is that we can speak to our morals, our ethics, our care, our love, but in the end, it is the money that matters. Greed is not a sin. Greed is good. Greed focuses. Greed makes us do better. Because if we aren't that way, then someone else will be that way, and you will take it away from her figuring out something else. And so in everything that we do in this course, you keep in mind that there are no instructions beyond greed. And when you see, I start showing you stock prices going up, stock prices going down, all of that kind of stuff. There is no thought behind that except for animal hunger in our world. When we calculate whether a project is a go or a no-go, it has nothing to do with, well, that's a great idea. People are really going to use this, find use in this. No, we're doing it for another reason. We're doing it, go back to that dollar sign, and you will see the actual reason for what is done in our world. Now, you can you take courses in other subjects, sociology and art, fine arts, and I am an artist, and all of that, and you can talk about feelings and beliefs and hopes and dreams. Not in here. That's the first lesson that I can help you understand in a course like this. Now, another thing that I need to get out on the table. I need you, sir. What is business?
What is business?
Yeah. Oh, you're majoring in business, right? And so you know exactly what it is. Definition?
Transactions.
I've had transactions. You know, I've had a transaction. You go up to parts of Chicago and you'll be at a transaction that you don't want to be in. I'm being mean here, okay? I'm being harsh and cruel. Madam, what is business? And if you say, I got nothing, that's fine. See, there's the problem is that you are all majoring in business. And I have been in business most of my life. But the problem is that we want to know, it would be nice to know before we start a business course, what exactly we mean by business. And I will only hint at part of it. It's an organized activity. Clearly, business is an organized activity. And every one of, oh, well, I shouldn't say everyone, but most, almost all of you have been involved in an organized activity. The next step would be that it requires inputs. And the whole purpose is to create an output. So there are some of the elements of what business is. It's organized activity. It utilizes inputs, what in economics are called factors of production. And the next step is to turn those inputs into something that is an output. It could be physical or it could be non-physical. In my world, in my other world as an artist, it's actually both. It is a physical product, art in a frame, but then there's the other side of it, which is the feeling that the people get, how it speaks to them, so they're, and what it makes them look like if they display it in their home or their business. So there's another piece to it. So that word output is actually quite complicated. It's quite complex. But there's got to be something else that's going on in there too. Well, why are we doing this organized activity? There are organized activities. You know, you could have a pickup game of round ball, and that's an organized activity. You take inputs, human capital, people playing, a ball, a net, all that, and you kind of create an output, a winner versus a loser. But that's not a business. So there's got to be something else that is delineating a business from many other things that could be done that are organized activities with inputs and outputs. We'll talk more about this as the semester goes along, but as the semester goes along, it will begin to sort of seep into you what we are actually doing, what as business people. And there have been times when I ask myself, what the hell am I doing? But we'll get to an answer to that. Now, the next thing that I want to do here is your first look at the numbers. And this is totally Stop it. Not now. Okay. I caution you that at first I'm going to say a lot of things. I'm going to show you numbers and all of that. And it really won't get, you won't see it the next time I ask you. And it won't it'll look more like just this maze of numbers. What do these mean and all of that? It comes over time. By the time the semester is over, I am actually amazed at how quickly the students can look at the screens and tell what's going on. It's kind of a process, and it's just like learning how to see this complex field and in its pieces and all the moving parts. Each one has meaning to it. In a better world, I would take you into a real trading platform. But I tried that once, and my account number was showing at the top of it, and that was not a good idea at all. So I avoid that at all costs anymore. And I would warn you that it's not really the best idea in the world to be using these open, non-paywall sites to do analysis. But I guarantee you that you don't need fancy trading programs or the advice of these talking heads on blogs and on the internet and TV. You don't need those to do the kind of analysis that will get you to where you want to be. I want you to look up there at the top. There are two different kinds of numbers that we pay attention to. There are exchanges. Now in Europe, these are called bourses, B-O-U-R-S-E-S. We call them exchanges in the United States. These are platforms, physical or online, where huge numbers of stocks are bought and sold. Some of these are so big that it's almost incomprehensible what's going on in them. And then there are these indexes. Now, an index is a sample of stocks. You can always tell it's an index because there will be a number after the word. So, for example, look right here. Will you quit doing that? The Dow 30. That would be 30 stocks. These are special stocks. These are huge, huge companies. The giants of the earth. Monopolies or oligopolies. That, in other words, when I look at these stocks, the 30 of them, on average, what they've done today, I'm looking at how information has impacted the highest realms of the business world. And that's an important point here. The only thing that drives stock prices, bond prices, commodity prices is information. It is these equations you'll see, these are actually the same equations that are in physics. And one of the most important laws in physics is one of Newton's laws. Every information is our propellant. A particle or something that is in motion will tend to stay in rectilinear motion unless it's acted upon by some force. So in other words, the force, a stock price would stay exactly level unless there were a force applied to it. That force is information. Positive information makes it blip up. Negative information makes it blip down. And when you have millions of traders, and you have unbelievable resources in the top tiers of those traders, information is constantly pouring in. So one second I might buy, the next second I might sell. Market goes up on the buy, market goes down on the sell, then someone else countervails me with a bigger order on the opposite side, and it just turns into a completely random motion. Know this, stock prices are not predictable. They follow one of the classic phenomena of the universe. It's called random walk. They just bounce around. If there's information positive, their average is a bounce up. And if it's negative, it's a bounce down. But they do not respond to historical data. Anyone who looks at charts and says, well, I'm going to be able to predict the stock price from looking at these data points for the last 5 weeks, it's useless. You can't do it that way. It is exactly the same process that happens in a chess game. The state of the board, as it sits, when you look at it, is all the information you can use to know what your next move is. It doesn't matter how the board got there, that will not tell you what your optimal move is next. And stock prices, bond prices, commodity prices are exactly the same way. You need the present information and your expectation for what the future information will be to move the stock price. The next thing that I will tell you is that if a price is going down, look at the Dow 30. You see how it's tailing downward today? Red is down, green is up. We would say that that is a bear market or a bear stock, or you are a bearish investor. If it's going the opposite way, if it's going up, that's a bullish market. That's a bull market. That's a bull. And you, if you believe stock prices are going to go up, you're a bullish investor. Or if you believe one stock price is going to go up, you are bullish on that stock. So right now we see that the Dow, at least, is in bearish territory. Now, another one that's important here for you to pay attention to is the S&P 500. That's 500 of the largest companies on earth. Taken together, those 500 companies constitute somewhere maybe around 65-70% of the entire market capitalization of the entire world. That's why we oftentimes use this S&P 500 as our proxy for the world portfolio, because it reflects so much of the value of the world. And notice that that's a 500, so that's an index. Now the next one, the NASDAQ. The NASDAQ has no number, that's an exchange. This is an entirely electronic exchange. And my penny stock house was on the NASDAQ. I traded NASDAQ stocks. NASDAQ stocks are small cap, small, risky, scrappy companies, and there are hundreds and hundreds of thousands of those. The National Association of Securities Dealers automated quotation gives you at any given flash what the overall of all those stocks taken together in a portfolio have done. And as you can see here, the NASDAQ is down. Now, interestingly, this is kind of an odd day, because usually the Dow is the safest. It sort of just goes up and down. These are giant companies. They don't really respond to economic conditions that much. Usually S&P 500 is down, or it moves more. So in this case, it's a little bit more. Now, the NASDAQ is behaving a little bit oddly today. Usually, it reacts much more. So if it's a bearish market, you should see the NASDAQ actually behave much more violently than it is today. Now, the big exchange, the one that you've probably seen the most, is the NYSE. That's the one, the pictures of the traders running around screaming and buy, sell, and all that kind of stuff, throwing papers everywhere. The NYSE is big, big companies, tens of thousands of them, huge companies. In my days as a consultant, I would take companies public, little tiny companies, and I mean, I wouldn't even try to get a listing on the NYSE. It was all NASDAQ, except for one, which was on an old exchange called the AMEX. But anyway, those are exchanges. The rest of them, the ones that I will generally focus on the most are the Dow, which is the top tier of the economy. And then the NYSE is the second tier. And then the NASDAQ are the low-level scrappers. Very quickly, before I run out of time here, I walk you around the world, because you will be global citizens. Now, I teach in other countries in the summer. I just got back from Central America, which was hot as hell. But I want you to know the world. Nikkei 225, Tokyo Exchange in Japan. The sun is up there when we are safe and sound asleep at night. Then the sun sets there also, the Hang Seng, which is the exchange of in Hong Kong, run by the Chinese. It's Chinese. That's Asia, all along here. Australia is technically Asia. Then you begin to, the sun goes down in Japan, and it starts to rise across Europe. And then you'll see on this one, the CAC 40. That's 40 companies on the Paris exchange. The DAX P, that's a bunch of companies on the Germany, on the Berlin exchange. And then you've got Euronext, which is sort of a composite of a bunch of stocks from different countries in the European Union. And then the sun is crossing high in the sky, and we get to the FTSE 100. That's 100 companies on the London exchange. And then the sun sets there, and then it rises in the United States, and we get the activity on our side of the planet. And then the sun sets here, and it rises in Japan again, and then the clock turns to the next day. There is never a time when the world of finance is asleep. There is always something happening. At night, I go, as I am sleeping, I have the trading going on in Japan. Later on, these light up, the opening bell, and then I see these and then these. That's what this is all about, is a global world of unbelievable amounts of money. And that's all I have for you today. I thank you.